Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to yet another episode of Gym Class All-Stars. We, your All-Stars here yet again to give you the rundown of all things sports. And as always, we are brought to you by Viget, your one-stop fantasy sports betting destination, free coins, real prizes. Download Viget today. We're going to start by giving, I missed this one at the end of last show, so I'm going to give the big shout out to Naomi Osaka, the winner of the Aussie Open. Not only that, to our faithful listeners, but Serena Williams, somebody she had to beat in the semifinal. That is an all-time great, the greatest women's tennis player of all time, one of the greatest athletes of all time. Naomi Osaka takes her down, could maybe be the last appearance of Serena Williams, who knows? But Naomi Osaka is going to be the name that dominates the tennis world for a long time to come. So big shout out to her. Going to move into the NBA now. You know, we had that big segment last week with our good buddy Scott Morgan from the Big Slumpin' Podcast. Talked about who we thought our All-Star reserves were going to be. The All-Star reserves have been announced, and we made some very good predictions and some, well, I think the NBA made some rough choices, but, you know, we'll get into that here. First thoughts, let's start with the West, because the West was a little more tame than the East, I think. Did anything stand out to you here? Anybody that didn't necessarily deserve to be there? First thoughts.
The original list having CP3 over Devin Booker was a little bit of a shock. And even Brandon Ingram, I know you have your thoughts about him, but still, like, we all love Chris Paul, but Devin Booker has been balling out. Brandon Ingram, dare I say the same thing. And then you have AD. He was also an all-star. Now, granted, we knew he'd be taken away for injury. And, you know, before the injury, obviously, was going to be an all-star. They put Devin Booker in instead of Brandon Ingram. I agree with that. But the CP3 one, a little bit interesting. Other than that, though, we did a pretty good job. Got a lot of them correct.
I agree that Booker is the right person to place Davis, but I completely disagree that he should be in over Chris Paul. I think Devin Booker's fantastic. This is not a knock on Devin Booker here. But the Suns from last year to the Suns this year, there is one major difference, and that is Chris Paul being in the lineup as an elite defensive player, one of, if not the best playmaking point guard in basketball. He completely changed the culture in Phoenix. To see their success and the fact that his stats are still holding up, I think it's he was an absolute lock, in my opinion. I did have him as a lock. But Booker also very well deserved. The Suns are having a fantastic year. Like you said, we knew Davis was going to get replaced. Ingram's having a great year. Don't get me wrong. He's doing good things for my fantasy team, but the Pelicans are bad.
Sure.
They don't necessarily deserve two All-Stars, and Zion is, you know, I'm critical of Zion, but he's having a spectacular year.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's pretty much the West. Nothing fancy. You know, Dame is on the bench. He'll probably play big minutes with Luka anyway, so who knows. The East, though, the East was a little nutty.
So, I'm pretty smart when it came to the East, though. I told you Julius Randle would make it, so.
You did. Let's start with the guards here. So Harden, we figured. Simmons, we figured. Mm-hmm. At least you and I figured. Scott wasn't quite sure of that one. But and then the last one was Zach LaVine, which he mentioned. I don't know if either of we did. I know I had Brogdon, but Van Vliet was another name up there. As far as that third guard, do you like that it was Zach LaVine?
Yeah, the problem was when we were doing recording last week, I always forget Zach LaVine is a shooting guard technically. Like, the dude is built like a forward, definitely a little smaller because I think he's 6'5", but still, like, he's a tall, very tall guard and can obviously do a lot of things that a slasher forward can do. But 100%, Zach LaVine for the All-Star game.
28-5-5 speaks for itself. The Bulls may not be the best team in the East right now, but when – and we'll talk about this a little more in depth, but when one game separates 4 through 10, standing matters a little bit less. Statistics matter a little bit more. Zach LaVine is putting up the stats for the Bulls. I was irked initially, but honestly, thinking about it, I was pretty happy that he made it, because especially the next guy in probably would have been Trae Young. The forwards, though, that was the big area of conversation, of contention. So Jaylen Brown, we had as a lock. I think all of us, he did make it, along with teammate Jason Tatum. The other forwards slash centers being Julius Randle of the Knicks and Nikola Vucevic of the Orlando Magic. So let's start with Julius Randle. You predicted it. So, you know, good job. People on Twitter comparing him to Chris Bosh. I think that's absurd, but we don't need to get into that. But, you know, he's played really well. He's playing a lot of minutes. The usage is high, but a lot of people feel he's earned this. You being one of them, how's it feel to get that one right?
I mean, the Knicks are, dare I say, decent this year, so you have to put someone in there. What's interesting though, and I, you know, Julius Randle, I think, deserved to make the All-Star game. Every year there's always that one player from a team who is incredibly mediocre that is doing phenomenal. That's also why I talked about a Jeremy Grant as well as a potential one. I will say though, and I'm kind of pissed about this, I really was going to say Vucevic should be an All-Star, and not because I think he deserves it, but he has had a track record where he continuously makes the All-Star game because there is a lack of center depth in the East. You got Embiid, that's basically it. So yeah. I was biting my tongue on that because I don't think he's, dare I say, he doesn't have much name recognition to him. He plays in Orlando. He's kind of just been there. So I should have trusted my instinct there. I did not. But we got to talk about the snub, though, who is now in the All-Star game because right. A bunch of people kind of were moving around. But Sabonis was not in the All-Star game, or at least not voted in initially. That is bizarre to me.
Absurd. I mean, the first player ever to average 20 points, 10 rebounds, 5 assists, and not be voted into the All-Star game. The only one of the four players in the league currently doing it, not voted into the All-Star game. Now let's talk about how he did, in fact, get in. So Kevin Durant has been ruled out through the All-Star game, the Eastern captain. He will still pick the team on Thursday, but he will not play his, you know, the fill-in for the starting lineup, I don't believe has been announced yet, but I'm led to assume it's going to be James Harden.
It's Tatum.
Tatum was the other guy, I would have figured. Yeah. So that's fine. But Sabonis was the guy that was announced as the replacement for Kevin Durant. But the story came out yesterday that Jimmy Butler was actually the person picked by the coaches to become the extra player. And he said no because Bam Adebayo wasn't going. We can get to how maybe true that is in just a second here. But I want to start with Sabonis because, in my opinion, even more so than neither Jimmy nor Bam being initially voted in, Sabonis was a player. He was the number one lock on my Eastern forwards list, ahead of Jaylen Brown. Those were the only two locks I had for the East forwards. And he didn't make it. I talked about those stats he's putting up. The Pacers, up until like the last two games, were having a decent amount of success given the Eastern Conference. No Pacers made it. Sabonis, I don't know. I see a lot of value there. He's not the best defensive player, but he's an elite offensive talent at the power forward position. What do you think went through the coaches' minds when they didn't select him to the All-Star game?
It's this wonderful just phenomenon that is no one gives a shit about Indiana. It's a real fun one. This happens every year with mid-market teams who don't have a specific star. Indiana is a great example of that, other than Victor Oladipo. There's a ton of examples, but the Pacers are always consistently good, and this year's not an exception to that. But no one really cares because they're good. They're not great. They don't really have – Domantas Sabonis, as good as he is, does not just immediately bring up like box office player.
Yeah.
That, for whatever reason, great, great guy. Definitely love his play style. Mimics, you know, younger me when I was like in fourth grade. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of the issue, and it sort of falls by the radar. Someone like Bam or Jimmy, Miami, sort of that sexy kind of. They were in the NBA Finals last year too. So let's not discredit that. I am a little bit salty, you know, this is just my residualness, that Jimmy was asked before Bam. Now, granted, it would make a better fit because it's a forward, but I think Bam deserves more of an All-Star nod than Jimmy based off his track record this year. I don't know. It doesn't matter in the end because Sabonis, I think, deserved it over both of them. Better fit for everything, sure, but whatever. It's done. We'll get to see a fun All-Star game again, hopefully, unless everyone drops out, which honestly could very much happen. I'm okay with it. I will probably watch the All-Star game. I'm sure you will too. So at this point, it's whatever.
Yeah, I don't – honestly, I got mad, really mad, that no Heat made it, because at the end of the day, if you're not taking standing into account as much because the East is so tight at this point, you have to pick the best players. And we talked last week about how, you know, Jimmy's the best, but he hadn't played a lot of games. We talked about how Tatum only played 6 more games. And now the Heat have the same record as the Celtics. It just didn't quite make sense that the best player left not in the All-Star game in the Eastern Conference by about 8 miles is Jimmy Butler.
You got to remember, though, this idea of having that box office name. I'm not saying Jimmy Butler isn't box office. We all know who he is. But Jimmy Butler for years has fallen by the wayside as this player who is like in the cusp of being elite or just really, really, really good. And he falls by the wayside because he does what he needs to do to win. And that is super important for a team. He's not dropping 40 every night, but his team is most likely getting the win, and he'll do, whether it's scoring 2 points or scoring 40, he'll do what is necessary for that win. And at the end of the day, with the NBA having so many games in the season, you're going to need to look at stats eventually because you're not watching every second of every game.
Mm-hmm. Nope, that's fair. And again, with the lack of amount of game, I mean, Jimmy's missed double digits in games this year. It wasn't the most obnoxious thing, especially because Miami until recently had been severely struggling this year. I think Jimmy had at least passed Bam in standing just because of the minimal amounts of success we had with Jimmy out of the lineup and the, you know, 8-3 or the 13-8 record we have with Jimmy in the lineup. So either way though, he maybe got voted in by the coaches. It sounds like he did. He said no, didn't want to go without his teammate, which, you know, I respect, but also, like, you know, take your all-star nod, man. Like, at the end of the day, you're gonna have all these things adding into where you stand all time, and all-star games are a huge, huge portion of that conversation. Any other all-star thoughts, snubs we want to mention, anything like that? I mean, Fred VanVleet really in the last few games has shown that he probably should have been an all-star.
That's a tough one though, because he's, you know, he is a starter, but I use the word starter kind of loosely because he falls in that sort of six-man category. That's a weird one. But also the guards they picked over him, I think, deserve it more. So I'm not like too mad about that.
All right. Still a little more here in the NBA. Mentioned the Heat hot right now. They're on a 5-game win streak. Goran Dragic has been back for the last two. They are so it's again with the messy East. They're currently the 7 seed. They are 16-17, and they play tonight against Atlanta. Pretty much the biggest thing, I think, is that Jimmy got healthy. I think everybody forgot that the Heat team that we see now was, other than like maybe the lack of Whiteside and a couple other random players, we're the exact same roster, and we're just a superstar away from championship contention. We got Jimmy Butler, and we made the NBA championship. We lost Jimmy Butler to start most of the year. I'm not saying the Heat are the best team in the East anymore, but I am saying that this should be expected. Jimmy Butler coming back the Heat should be expected to make the 4-5 matchup.
But you do this shit every year where it's like, you know, if we have just a perennial superstar on our team with our great roster, we're a shoo-in to win the championship. But yeah, so is every other top team in the East. If Joel Embiid and the Sixers added LeBron James to the roster, yeah, I tend to believe they'd win a championship judging by what they have.
I didn't say LeBron James. The Heat were a bad, not playoff team the year before acquiring Jimmy Butler. We missed the playoffs by, like, we weren't even 9. We were like 10 or 11. We didn't have a good year. Josh Richardson was our best player. The system was just built where if we had one guy that could just kind of do everything a little bit, obviously it's like no shit. A team would do great with a superstar, but the Wizards suck. And they have two.
Well, here's the problem is that second one, who we're not going to name, a superstar. Or is he kind of a little bit inefficient, as we've talked about? Bradley Beal obviously is a superstar. Russell Westbrook, will go to the Hall of Fame one day for his contributions. But the problem is, and everyone harps on it, the man is unbelievably inefficient. One of the most freak athletic people you will ever see in your life. And I would be terrified to try and go up against him. Like, he would actually probably pummel me into the ground. But he is unbelievably inefficient to watch. He's just shooting twos and goes boing off the back of the rim, and they're just like, what are you doing? It's tough because I get what you mean. I understand. Like, if you add another key piece to the Heat, yes, they are 100% a scary threat. But that's the thing. So are a lot of other teams.
Oh, I'm not saying you need to add another piece to the Heat. I'm saying Jimmy Butler needed to be healthy. Jimmy Butler was the only thing we needed. Like, to win the championship, of course we need another piece. We couldn't beat the Lakers. I don't think we're getting by Brooklyn or Philly this year unless, you know, we just play out of our minds. Jimmy was the piece Jimmy is everything. Jimmy is our God at this. Like, he is literally the exact same player as Dwayne Wade, just not quite as good, a little bit bigger. He's all we need. I swear to God, if this roster stays healthy, if Dragic stays healthy, if Hero comes back and doesn't get hurt, like, that was the biggest thing for the Heat last year, is they had very few injuries to have to deal with. And that was part of their large success. They can, especially the core guys, Jimmy, Bam, the guards that get the minutes, you know, Kenny Nunn still needs to stay in the rotation, but if they can stay healthy, seriously, 4-5 matchup is absolutely in the picture in this whatever you want to call the Eastern Conference right now. All right, that's my Heat rant for today. We are going to talk about the Sixers, though. We haven't been talking about them a lot because they, and them in Brooklyn, they are going to be neck and neck, you assume, the rest of the year. Brooklyn just half a game back. Had they won last night, they actually would have gone into first place. Philly lost to Cleveland. Brooklyn ended up losing to Dallas. So Philly stays on top. Who do you think is going to be the number one seed at the end of the regular season?
I think the Sixers, just because I imagine KD is a little bit injury prone and people are taking rest. I think the Sixers are a little bit more consistent in their lineups and also just will probably win a bit more games because of their depth.
I like that. It's close.
It's going to be close, yeah, but exactly. I just, like,
if Brooklyn gets healthy, their three stars stay healthy through the regular season, like, who knows the limits of that offense. But I think you're right. The Sixers have had relative consistency. Other than, like, COVID stints, nobody's really missed a long period of time with any injury. Bingo. So that's been pretty good. And they're playing excellent basketball. I know the loss to Cleveland is really tough because it's a team you should beat. They are also 4-0 against the Sixers and the Nets this year. But Joel Embiid plays this just brand of basketball we have not – we've seen glimpses of from him before, but now we are seeing him do night in and night out. Is Joel Embiid in the conversation for a top five player in the NBA?
Well – yeah, because he's going to be in the MVP running this year. And honestly, I don't think statistically, like odds-wise, he's the front runner, but I think he should be because he's beating LeBron in a ton of statistical categories, if I'm not mistaken. And I think him, Jokic, and LeBron are sort of the top three right now. Jokic, when you do advanced stats, is a little bit better, like win share-wise and like advanced offensive rating. It's a little weird, but Joel Embiid, points, rebounds, all that. His team's in first. I think if they can keep it up, yeah, I think you have to vote for him. I think he'll win it, which is really cool to say, to be honest, because it's been since Iverson, since Philly has won MVP.
Yeah, no, I mean, okay, so my other question here is going to lead into the little rant that I have.
Okay.
Right now, not like what it's supposed to be, what it could be, right now, who would you rather have on your team, Joel Embiid or Giannis Antetokounmpo?
Well, yeah, I would say Embiid. Like, that's – I think he can do more. The fact he can do, like, step-back threes now to a degree and not right. have you want to jump out a window is phenomenal. Like, a 7-foot guy should not be required to do that, but he can still do it pretty well. Now, with that being said, though, Giannis is a much more athletic version of Embiid. He can't shoot, but he can bound up and down the court tremendously. He's honestly kind of fast for his size. Like, he's got a little bit of, like, if you took Embiid and shoved a bit of Russell Westbrook athleticism into him, that's kind of what you get. You get a Giannis. And I'm not saying Embiid's not athletic, but he's not. He uses a lot of his size and his God-given abilities.
He's a physical player where Giannis is a lot of finesse moves. It's about the agility. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's like he also very quick, can swat stuff down, like that kind of thing.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Right now, I'm taking Joel Embiid. Like, you want to talk about, like, you're talking about that setback three, but going deeper to that, like, Joel Embiid not only is a great three-level scorer, he is one of the best three-level scorers the NBA has to offer right now. I mean, he can consistently knock down threes for Philly. It's not like he's a draw up a play for him type of three, but if he gets an open look, he's hitting it. It's not like a 50-50 thing anymore. He's knocking them down. He is one of, if not the best mid-range shooter in basketball right now. And then, of course, you're going to talk about the most physically dominant center dominating the paint. I mean, he had his 50-point game earlier this year. Man, don't get me wrong. Giannis has the potential, of course, to be an all-time player, but Joel Embiid might be the most dominant center we've seen since Shaq.
Yeah, 100%. There has not been a more dominant center since that. I mean, you could maybe
Dwight,
sure, but that was kind of fleeting, like consistent sort of dominance.
Mostly just defense.
Yeah. Well, the other thing too, you could make an argument about offensively DeAndre Jordan, but DeAndre Jordan had no moves outside of literally destroying people on dunks.
Yeah.
But still very dominant for that reason. But yeah, no, I would say since Dwight. That's a fair point, because Dwight, we forget how dominant the dude was.
Yeah, I think when it's all said and done, there's a very large chance Joel Embiid is the better player than Dwight Howard all the time. I mean, Dwight Howard, don't get me wrong, three straight defensive player of the years is absurd. He should be more respected by people, but Joel Embiid is going to be something special. The big thing for him now is just stay healthy. Stay healthy and stay in Philly.
Stay healthy, stay in Philly, and also stay in shape.
Don't do drugs.
Don't do drugs. It's a PSA for
all right. Last little fun one for the NBA. The Thunder and the Hawks played a game this past week, and they both showed up in essentially the same color jersey. Man, if I was the point guard on that team, I would have been turning the ball over every goddamn play. I don't know what your face looks like. I just know what color you're wearing. No, that was just like somebody made a mistake, probably the home team, but like, that's just kind of funny.
Someone got fired straight up.
Yeah, right. Oh, man, tough one there. But Hawks struggling right now. Thunder, you know, it doesn't really matter. They're trying to tank. But Hawks play Miami today. Jimmy is questionable. I would assume he's going to play, but he's listed as questionable, so I figured I'd mention it. But they Atlanta's got to learn how to play defense. They're in the same boat as Washington. If they can learn how to play defense, that's their, you know, ticket to the playoff run. But the other thing is, until yesterday, the entire Southeast Division, which is Miami, Charlotte, Orlando, Washington, and
Atlanta?
Yes, Atlanta. None of them were in the playoffs. No, or at least the top eight. And that was disgusting.
Yeah, doesn't one of them have to get a bid, though?
No, that is not how it works. Division winners do not get guaranteed
playoffs. Okay, because we did talk about this.
No, you're right. You're right. They do get a guaranteed playoff spot, but it's not top three anymore.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, usually the division winner is up there because, you know, they're pretty good and play the shittier teams.
I think Miami was 5 last year and won their division. So, like,
okay.
You're not going to get a guaranteed home court advantage in the NBA. It's not no football team home game scenarios, but I do believe you get
your own. This is some NFC East bullshit right here. Pick it up, okay. Southeast Division.
All right, speaking of the NFC East, not necessarily going there, but we are going to transition into football here.
Football.
Love football. A little bit of stuff going on. I'm going to start here. Big Ben is
back, baby. He's back. You're doomed.
He is in the process of reconstructing his deal to what I have to hope and assume is a more team-friendly deal. Otherwise, he was going to be making $41 million this year. Stephen A. Smith came out and said this was the only option for Pittsburgh. I, as a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, 100% agree. Mason Rudolph should not be trusted to be the starting quarterback. We are not going to get a top 10 pick this year in the draft by trading, so we should not pretend like we can. Let Big Ben understand that this is last year. Maybe bring in a younger guy to have him try and show him the ropes, teach him the offense, and if Big Ben gets hurt, just let him be and put in a backup, because Pittsburgh's not winning the Super Bowl this year. Ben Roethlisberger, like with or without Ben Roethlisberger, Pittsburgh is not going to win the Super Bowl this year, you know, unless the defense does some historic bullshit. But I think it's the only way. I mean, he's the only one that understands the system, and Mason Rudolph has been horrible in the games he's gotten in. So as sad as it is, Big Ben's our guy.
Doesn't matter. It's the Dwayne the Rock Haskins era. And let me tell you, Robbie, it is the revitalization of the Steel City. Our boy The Rock is going to come in there and fix Pittsburgh and make it great again. So I hope you're ready for it.
He wants to play running back. That sounds great.
He wants to play running back? Is this man on drugs? Like, what happened?
No, I would love if he played running back, because I don't think we're going to bring Connor back. We might draft Najee Harris. I would love if we drafted Najee Harris, but who knows? Who knows what's up?
Here's what you do. And this is – there was a team I played against when I played football, and I was, like, probably in, like, 6th, 7th grade. All they would do would be a halfback pitch, and – our defense wasn't strong enough or complex enough to handle this. So the running back would run and would have the ball. Me, as the corner, would either have to stay in coverage or come after the running back. So I'd pick one. Usually it was go after the running back. The running back would throw over top of me. Okay, makes sense. That's what Dwayne Haskins can do. Now, my idiot safeties behind me, for some reason, would not cover the tight end or the wide receiver. So every play was a first down. And this is why I, to a degree, hated playing football, because people were idiots. So, honestly, if you take that offense, bring it to Steel City, and have the rest of the league go brain dead, Dwayne Haskins is going to be the MVP next year. I'm just saying. So there's hope.
I love your forward thinking, and I welcome.
Do you really?
Don't get me wrong. If Dwayne Haskins turns into a fantastic quarterback, then he by all means can take over the role. But if Dwayne Haskins goes out in the camp this year and wins the starting quarterback job, I will be terrified that the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to go 0-16.
Well, only time will tell.
If they want to hire you as the new offensive coordinator, though, I think I'm down for that after that wonderful explanation of a play that doesn't sound like you got too much help on. So.
Nope, don't want to talk about it. I realize right. I remember that game specifically getting yelled at by my coaches. And I'm like, the first time I remember doing it, I went after the running back and he threw it over my head, obviously. And coach is like, why didn't you stay in coverage? You're a corner. And I'm like, okay. And they ran that same play again. And this time I stayed in coverage. And what happened, Robbie? He ran for a first down like a normal human.
That'll do Ta-da. It, man. Those peewee coaches, they don't know what they're doing. All right. Another quarterback making headlines this week. At first, sounded like he wanted to trade. Russell Wilson came out to the Seahawks and said he had a list of four teams that he would like to be traded to. However, his agent restated that Russell Wilson wants to stay in Seattle. And this was a if he were to get traded type of deal. I'll read you off the teams right here. The Dallas Cowboys, the Chicago Bears, the Las Vegas Raiders, and the New Orleans Saints. First off, what team needs him the most? I can't assume it's the Saints.
Well, okay, when you say what team needs him the most, do you mean like a desperation type play? Because that answer is the Bears. The Bears need something to be excited about. I know they made the playoffs, but like on God, it's kind of a miracle they're in the playoffs. Now, in terms of the other teams, though, I think if you put Russell Wilson in Las Vegas, that is a pretty unstoppable team because that line is one of the best things I've ever seen. And there have been photos circulating of Derek Carr with just this beautiful pocket. And if Russell Wilson has that, the league is doomed. Now, New Orleans is interesting because we thought Drew Brees is going to retire. Then there's photos of him circulating of him working out, doing the sleds, all that. So I don't know about that. New Orleans should probably try and move on from him. And I mean that in the nicest way possible in the sense that there has been a regression, unlike Tom Brady, for example. It's kind of what we saw in Peyton Manning's career. And then Dallas, I wouldn't want that. It's an upgrade from Dak. Yeah. But I also think Dak deserves to get paid to a degree. Like, I like Dak Prescott as a human, and that's hard to say as an Eagles fan. So let's keep Dak out of Dallas because he usually like – or sorry, let's not keep Dak out of Dallas. Let's keep Russell Wilson out of Dallas because I'd prefer Russell Wilson not to beat us twice a year.
You know, Russell Wilson in Dallas sounds like the NFL fans' biggest nightmare. Yeah. Chicago sounds like Russell Wilson's biggest nightmare. I think his career would end much earlier than it should if he goes there.
This is the incredible thing. I have been hearing reports that Russell Wilson is, like, most interested in Chicago, which is baffling to me.
I have to assume that has partly to do with he wants to live in Chicago or he wants to, you know, send his kids to school in Chicago, something like that. Because at the end of the day, if he's just looking at this as what's the best situation for me, he has to assume it's either the Raiders because of that line or the Saints because of who he would have in his offensive arsenal. Chicago doesn't quite make sense that, you know, Russell Wilson would probably keep Allen Robinson around, but at the end of the day, it's still an underwhelming offense. The line still isn't very good. And
the defense is kind of eh.
The defense, it has its pieces, but it was a far cry from what it was that first year they acquired Khalil Mack. I don't know. I don't like that.
I wish.
Maybe it's just because I see the Bears as this bad team and I like Russell Wilson, but
I wish Russell Wilson like wasn't married yet because he's like a pretty religious guy. And when he got married to, I think his name is Ciara or Sierra, you know, that's when you start having kids, all that. But I love this idea of like if he wasn't married and was single, but like still like kind of, you know, super celibate, this idea of him going to Las Vegas and just having like Mark Davis, like, and they're meeting, like throwing strippers at him is like, you're a single dude. You like this? Come to Las Vegas. He's just uncomfortable. Just like wincing there. He's like, I want to come here, but everything is so wrong with this place.
Oh my God. That'd be funny.
That would be.
I think the nightmare scenario here, though, is Drew Brees retires, Russell Wilson goes to the Saints, and they're the best offense of all time because he's throwing to Michael Thomas and handing it off to Alvin Kamara.
That's, yeah, I don't like that idea from a fan perspective. At the same time, though, that is a good fit. Line-wise, maybe not as much, but that's a high-powered offense that kind of just needs a quarterback.
Yeah, I agree. I would be shocked if he gets traded to anywhere but Chicago or the Raiders. Those sound like Chicago, obviously being, you know, who you say is his top destination potentially. And Vegas, as a quarterback, that just sounds like heaven. Like, come on. That line was great. Derek Carr got his value skyrocketed because of that. I mean, he's not a top tier quarterback in the league, but I mean, when you have 5 seconds to throw the football every possession, it's pretty good. All right. Not a whole lot more in the NFL. Again, a lot of releases just for salary reasons. Again, teams ramping up for the offseason more so than anything else. Adam Humphries got released. Jarrell Casey. Orlando Brown of the Ravens requested a trade. He tweeted out that he is a left tackle, even though the Ravens were not playing him at left tackle. So he clearly wants to be his position. So we'll
it's
see
like
what
an identity
there.
Crisis. Like, I am a left tackle. Look at me.
Hey, man, he's just letting everybody know he's got that side of the line covered.
I just that God that like, I know I get what he is getting at, where he really wants to play his position, but like I can just see a tweet like, I am a left tackle. Why does anyone understand?
No one gets it. He's just out there telling everybody what he does, man. He wants to make sure Madden gets it right.
It's like in a Community when Chang, like the first season, goes, I am a Spanish genius, which is him going, I am a left tackle.
Always happy and welcoming of Community references, so thank you for that. But yeah, that's about it going on in the NFL. Again, early in the offseason, not a whole lot going down. Moving into the MLB here, spring training began today already, recording on a Sunday here. So baseball is going to be back very soon. One of the all-time greats, Miguel Cabrera, has recently come out and said that this is the year he wants to get to 500 home runs and 3,000 hits. So before I get to how close he is, I just want to mention the list of players that have accomplished both of those feats. Hank Aaron, Alex Rodriguez, Albert Pujols, Willie Mays, Rafael Palmeiro, and Eddie Murray. So Miguel Cabrera will be joining a pretty quality list, if I do say so.
And you know what? He probably won't make the Hall of Fame because that's how the Hall of Fame voting works in the MLB.
MLB Hall of Fame voting is crazy. For Miguel Cabrera's case, he's on the Tigers, so they're a struggling team, but if he can stay healthy, these are very achievable statistics. He needs 13 home runs, and he needs 134 hits. I believe
those are achievable.
Yeah, I think that's half a healthy season, and he should be able to get, you know, he really is turning into a slugger at this point because, you know, he's getting older. There's only so much he should be able to do, and that's one of his top qualities. So both those well within his grasp, I would say.
Yeah, speaking of Tigers in spring training, don't worry, folks. If you thought the Phillies would be good this year, you're wrong because we're losing 7-2 to the Tigers. Woo!
I saw that before we started recording, and I was really hoping it would get a little better by the time we got to this, but unfortunately not. Maybe the NL East won't be quite as competitive as we think, but Bryce Harper has other thoughts. Bryce Harper came out and straight up said, it's not even a question that the NL East is the toughest division in baseball. The Mets made moves, the Braves and the Nationals obviously competing. Our Phillies have doing their very best, bringing back Real Muto, trying to bolster the pitching. And even the Marlins were in the playoffs last year. So who knows how the success that they'll be able to have as well. Is there another division that even really competes at this point in terms of full division competitiveness?
No, I think the AL East, though, to a degree, has it, where the Yankees are definitely a contender and maybe even a favorite in the AL. Blue Jays are looking good. It's the AL East, I think, over a period of time is going to get super competitive. Like this year, the NL East is, yeah, going to be that division. Maybe you could make an argument for the NL Central, but that's a little bit of an iffy argument because they're, yeah, exactly. But you have the Cardinals, the Brewers can be hit or miss, like things like that. But yeah, at top to bottom, definitely NL East.
Yeah, I see what you mean by like competitiveness in that Central division, but I think like the quality is the thing that drags it down. It's like none of them are necessarily teams contending for the World Series, where like the Braves got pretty close last year. Like all of the, I mean, maybe the counter of the Marlins, but all of those NL East teams are very much just a hot playoffs away from at least facing the Dodgers in that championship series. So All right, one last thing here for baseball. Just a shout out to Marla Miller. She was the first ever woman to be a senior VP in the MLB. She's the VP of special events. She will be stepping down. Just to shout out some of her duties, she was in charge of planning the All-Star Game, the World Series, and any ceremonies that the league would hold, among some other things. Just wanted to give her a shout out. Again, trailblazing women, always appreciated here. So hoping she has a fantastic time in retirement. One more sport to get to here before we move on to our super fun segments would be the NCAA college basketball, getting really close to March, getting really close to tournament time and championship series. The biggest game of last week was very unfortunate for me to watch. Number 3 Michigan Wolverines absolutely clapped the number 9 Iowa Hawkeyes. I think it was 79-57 was the final score. Hunter Dickerson of Michigan has put himself, he's not in the top 5 for finalists for the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar Award, but I think he might be the most talented center. He's a freshman, got a very bright career ahead of him. He outplayed Luka through and through, which, so this is going to bring me to two of my points. We're going to start on the Michigan side of things. Baylor lost. Gonzaga, the only undefeated team left in college basketball. Is Michigan going to rise to 2, or is there a conversation that they should be 1 at this point?
Not to take away from what Gonzaga did, I think what Michigan has done, I know Gonzaga's undefeated, but Michigan has beaten a lot of really great teams in a very tough division. It's hard because the undefeatedness, like, there's an aura around it, but I think you got to maybe one more prime win and, like, you got to switch them out.
I agree. I think we're getting to this point where Michigan, you know, they've missed some time, had a few games get canceled. You know, they had that 3-week hiatus because of COVID, but they're winning most. They have one loss, and it was a decent team. They are beating these spectacular opponents both on the road and at home. Not to take away anything Gonzaga's done, but Gonzaga has the more impressive roster, and they're still only, you know, this half game ahead, essentially. I don't think it'll happen, but I think Michigan's the best team in college basketball right now. So I would vote them as number 1. The flip side of this, though, so, you know, I live in Iowa, so I hear a lot about Iowa Hawkeyes, Luka Garza. Got a lot of people at work. They come to me because, you know, I love basketball. I talk a lot about basketball, and they're always like, hey, Robbie, where's Luka going to get drafted? You know, he's the only basketball player I've ever heard of. Where's he going to get drafted in the NBA? And I sit there, and I'm like, you know, my answer's changed.
You're like a drug dealer. Like, hey, yo, where's that Luka Garza guy going? Just like, scratching their, like, face. Like, where's he going? Is you got any Garza?
I mean, like, yeah, no, it almost exactly like that.
People are cracked out of their mind going to Heirloom. Like, yo, you got any update on Garza?
You got that news? Like I said, it's changed. I've at the highest had him going in the lottery, but we're getting to the point where he's going to get a chance in the NBA, but it might be an undrafted chance. And if he wins Player of the Year, that's a different story. The Player of the Year almost always gets drafted. He's struggling. He's really slow. That's the biggest thing about modern centers. You know, you look at someone like Joe, and he is a slower player for the NBA, but he is not a slow person. He can get up and down the court when he needs to. Luka Garza cannot. And I don't mean to compare Luka Garza to Joel Embiid. That's a very unfair comparison. But that's the biggest thing for big men these days, is you got to be able to run up and down. You got to be able to move left to right. And Luka he struggles with that. He's a fantastic interior scorer. He can spread the floor on offense. But there's very little need for players like that. You know, he might get a shot at a backup center, and if he bulks up, stays one of the stronger players, like he gets the benefit of right now, very well could make it. But in terms of draft stock, I mean, the Hawkeyes have 7 losses, and some of that you have to blame on the fact that it's 4 guards and Luka Garza, because that's obnoxious in my opinion. But he's struggling. They're not winning games, and I'm getting to this point where I believe Iowa will be losing in the second round of the tournament based off, you know, potential matchups. And I'm the Hawkeye fan.
I know. Let me play a little bit of optimist here. First of all, Stephen A. Smith, you need to calm down. We love, as sports fans, to be super reactionary to the short term. And what Luka Garza has done long term, whether it's his entire career or even the season, should be taken into account. And one honest thing that I have noticed, I was been playing the entirety of the Big Ten, some very tough, stiff competition, and it's been even cycling through it. So, yeah, getting the brakes blown off by Michigan, not a good look by any means. At the same time, though, if you're playing that competitive amount of games that fast, you're going to have losses like that. And it's been a bad shift for them, though. I'm not disregarding that. But I still think he's very good choice for the Wooden Award. Center of the year as well. It's the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar Award. You know, we talked about Kofi Cockburn. We talked about the Michigan guy. But I still think Garza's kind of, from just name value alone, probably going to win it. Mm-hmm. It's going to cut his draft stock is going to fluctuate based on how he does in the tournament. If he gets the brakes blown off him in the first round, yeah, that would 100% hurt his draft stock. But we also forget someone like DeAndre Ayton, who lost in the first round a few years ago, was also number one pick. Now, granted, a little bit different story. The dude was absolutely dominant at Arizona. Not saying Garza isn't, but different narrative here. I still think he's a first round pick. Maybe it's a little tough because maybe teams don't need as many centers, but I think there's a lot of value for him. I think while he is slow, he can space the floor pretty well. How tall is he?
He's like right around 7 feet, 6'11", 7 foot. I don't think he's quite 7 feet, but he's up there.
I wasn't sure if he was like a 6'10". You can kind of convert him to just a tall power forward who can do more, but definitely not. That's a center
height. Again, though, the speed thing is going to come into factor. He can't really guard. You know, power forward in the NBA at this point is pretty much your second small forward. And you're asking Luka to guard that guy. That's going to be a tall order.
No one can see this, but I'm definitely laughing because my first thought is, what if you played him like Boban? But like, that is maybe the most heinous comparison I can think of, but it's like kind of what comes to mind because they sort of look alike. That's so mean though. Okay, let's backtrack. I still think he's gonna be a first round pick. It may be a bit tough because centers are not as highly coveted in the league as they used to be, and a lot of teams that needed centers kind of went out and got them. Maybe the Mavs trade Porzingis and he becomes a Maverick. And then you got the two Lukas just balling out together, the slowest individuals you'll ever see running an offense. But I think undrafted is a very bit of a stretch in terms of like his production. The dude is still putting up solid numbers. I know it's been stuff has not gone their way as late, but to say he's not one of the top 60 players in college basketball right now, or who is going to get drafted, is asinine.
Okay, that's fair. I think you're right. I think he'll be drafted. I can't promise first round. But
yeah,
the more so I think what the point of my little rant there was supposed to be is that I wouldn't be surprised if Luka Garza's name isn't spoken him out after 3 years in the NBA. That's more so.
Okay.
Like he could do better, but in terms of success at the next level, he's nothing special athletically. Like I said, he's slow. Nothing special in terms of NBA players. In college, of course, he is an absolute freak, but Justice Winslow was an absolute freak. He got to the NBA and was like, oh, everybody can do this. That's the big shock that some players aren't quite prepared for. And I don't, you know, four-year athletes especially usually aren't prepared for because they spent those full 4 years learning the college game. And then all of a sudden you got to turn around and learn this brand new game. It's very difficult. Very few players can do it. All of this being said, Luka still eats for free at my restaurant. Luka can do whatever he wants. He should be the National Player of the Year, in my opinion, still. But I'm just being a little weary because Iowa now has 7 losses and they are going to fall out of the top 10 yet again. It's worrisome.
Maybe. But also, like, I know this isn't the record, but going 25-7 in a season is a very, very good record before the NCAA tournament. I know it's not the record, obviously, but 7 losses isn't unheard of for, like, even a – I mean, not a one seed, but especially a two. It's definitely very common. But we'll see. Yeah, the four-year idea of college players is very interesting. The last player we really saw adapt to that was Kyle Kuzma, in my opinion. And Kyle Kuzma was sort of a gem in the draft that sort of just turned out to be
diamond
at least serviceable. So it will be interesting. I mean, there's plenty of examples of four-year athletes not going anywhere because at this point, you're matured enough where it's kind of hard to learn the new game and you've sort of experienced the level of basketball that is college and it's different from the NBA. You have that culture shock. So
exactly.
Time will tell.
Sticking in the Big Ten, Ayo Dosunmu of Illinois, another National Player of the Year candidate, is out indefinitely with a facial injury. It's not believed to be too serious, but he did miss their game this weekend. He is more than likely going to miss their next game. He Illinois is going to make the tournament. So if he doesn't come back for the Big Ten tournament, it's not the end of the world. They're just going to get a worse seed if, you know, they lose early in the Big Ten tournament. But he is going to be absolutely pivotal if they want any shot at making a championship run. That being said, this is a very big opportunity for Kofi Cockburn. He is now the sole best player on that team. What do you expect to see from him to kind of finish out this year? Saying he assumes that Sunmo is just going to be out for the rest of the regular season.
You know, it's the perfect storm of him potentially just having more efficiency, more usage to actually make a push at, I would imagine not the Wooden Award, but to make a push definitely at the Jabbar Award. But like we talked about before, I don't know how you potentially give a guy the Wooden Award and not give him the best positional player award as well. But who knows? I mean, you see it before, kind of, you know, spread out the awards and all that. But it's a good opportunity, especially with Iowa losing and Garza not putting up, you know, 30 and a half like he was before at the start of the season.
Yeah, yeah. Unfortunately, we're a far cry from those days.
Yeah. But so that happens when you're playing Southern Methodist.
Yeah, no, it's kind of nice when you get those tune-up games. But, all right, that's pretty much it. One last thing here, though, is just for the tournament, the NCAA has announced that they will not name replacement teams for the tournament. So the way they're going to handle it, they're going to announce the bracket. They're going to give teams 48 hours if they need to medically withdraw because of COVID or whatever other reason. And then on March 18th, they will post the official NCAA bracket. And no matter what, no matter round, you will not be replaced. If you are out because of COVID, your team has lost. The biggest thing is on those 2 days where they can switch out teams, say Illinois gets a 2 seed and they have to miss the tournament because of COVID. Whoever their replacement is just slots in at the 2 seed. There is no reseeding. They are just technically the 2 seed for that bracket. That's how it works.
You didn't say the other team picks it, right? It's the tournament picks it.
Yes, yes.
Oh, that would be awesome if like the team was like, we really don't want to play. Let's put some bum team at number 2 and just kind of see what happens. That's a good social experiment.
That'd be fun.
That would putting like Florida Gulf Coast as a 2 seed, electric.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. I mean, the concept is like it would in theory be the next best team, but if whatever, you know, my big question is like, you know, the teams where it's like you're the conferences where it's like you only get your champion in the tournament, it's just gonna be whoever lost the championship. But like if there's like a bunch of Big Ten teams that are like right on that bubble area and they don't make it, like what if we got this like a little quick mini secondary Big Ten tournament of all those teams that are like, what, you know, you pick 4 teams, it's like y'all are each going to play a round robin, whoever has the best record at the end is going to the tournament. I don't know if you have time for that, but
for our viewers, let's name the randomest teams we've seen in March Madness history. I'll start first. Mercer.
Is it Robert Morris?
Robert Morris, yeah, that's one. You know, I know I love my Patriot schools, but Colgate, that's another one.
Holy Cross.
Holy Cross, yeah, they beat Lehigh the 1 year they got in.
Lehigh.
Well, hey, great school. Love their – repping them right now.
Oh, yeah.
let me think. I mean, Florida Gulf Coast is one. George Mason.
Yeah, George Mason. Oh, my God. There's player George Mason and there's college George Mason.
Honestly, VCU, and not because, like, they're all usually in the tournament, but just the name alone.
Wichita State.
Northern Illinois. I didn't know Northern Illinois existed.
Yo, UNI. Oh, my God. Let me tell you, that year. So for those of you, the big special thing about UNI is they were that 11 seed that blew it to Alex Caruso's Texan A&M team in the last 30 seconds of the game because they couldn't inbound the basketball. I had UNI not just winning their first round game, not just winning against Texas A&M in that next game. I had them winning 2 more rounds because their best player, Wes Washburn, was a sensational clutch time player, and he proved it when they won their huge game in the conference championship to get them there, and he proved it again when he was the assist on the half court shot that got them the overtime in their first round game and ended up winning them the game. It bothered me that he blew it so hard.
This man was unbelievably clutch and then managed to blow an 11 point lead in a minute.
The thing that happened was Northern Illinois' essentially their main inbounder got hurt. They were only running a 6-man rotation and nobody else knew how to inbound the ball correctly, apparently, which is absurd.
Yes.
So they turned the ball over like 5 consecutive possessions and an 11 point lead was blown in like a minute and 13 seconds. Oh, absurd. God. Alex Caruso was the best player on the team that came back and won.
That's right. Let's not forget that.
Can't forget that. The Golden Eagle. All right. That's our fun little college rant. That's what we got for the news today. You know, we'll be back next week, of course, with all the rest of the stuff. A little shorter news segment today, but got a fun little twist on trivia that we're going to do for this week. So Alex, you want to take it away and explain what that's going to be?
Yes. So this is our third trivia match against Ravi and myself. If I'm not mistaken, I won the first one. You won the second. So this is basically for all the marbles. And while pride is something that we both have come to love and respect, the other thing we also love is making our friends suffer. So we decided to add a punishment to this. We're not going to do it in this episode. So, you know, don't worry, you won't miss it. But next episode, we're going to have the punishment to the loser, and it's going to be exciting. We debated about what the punishment should be. My first thought was texting like an ex or tweeting at an ex. But we realized how malicious that could be, not only for us, but for other people involved. So we decided, what's up?
It could be fun.
But it could be. It's fun for the other person. It makes my skin crawl if it was me.
We've referenced a few exes on this show.
Yeah, we did. So we decided to go, instead of potential mental pain, we decided to go the route of physical pain because, you know, that's obviously fun.
Yeah.
One of the worst sensations that I think you and I have both experienced is this idea of brushing your teeth and drinking orange juice. That citrus mixed with that mint burns. It's horrible. And to me, we're going to do that. So next episode, I think one of us is going to have to chew a ton of gum before the show. And then like at the start of the show, we'll just see them chug a bit of orange juice. And
you have to post the audio for that segment or the video for that segment.
It's just screaming.
And now baseball.
Baseball. Ah. So we'll be doing that. We will put video up for that, of course, because it's no fun just to hear people scream into a mic. I don't know why you're listening to us in that case. If you don't find it fun.
Take over TikTok.
Yeah, or yes, we're gonna take over TikTok.
Still download TikTok. I don't know.
I think you can. I don't think Trump got rid of it. So
nice.
Shout out former President Donald Trump for not removing a Chinese app from the App Store. I guess.
Wow, fantastic stuff.
All right. All hail our new president. Okay.
So you want to go first? You want to go second? You want to flip a coin?
Do you have a preference?
I want to ask first.
Okay.
All right. Do you just want to go in an order? You just want to pick a sport and I'll give it to you?
Let's go hockey first, but then go hockey, MLB, NBA, NFL, and then the random.
Cool.
So kind of like reverse order.
Awesome. All right. So starting with the NHL, what team holds the record for the most combined penalty minutes in a single game? Is it A, the New Jersey Devils, B, the Philadelphia Flyers, or C, the Ottawa Senators?
My gut reaction is to say the Flyers. Senators, Flyers, and who was the third? The first one you said?
The Devils.
Oh, boy. Okay. I feel like eliminating the Senators is a good start because of the Canadian aspect of it. But you're also laughing, so that kind of concerns me.
I'm going to laugh at every point in this to confuse you.
I know. I'm going to say the New Jersey Devils.
Final answer?
Final answer.
Well, with 213 combined penalty minutes, the Philadelphia Flyers hold that record.
I figured, because the Broad Street Bullies.
That was a fun one because the second team on the list doesn't exist anymore. I forget the name of it, but they're not real, and the Devils were third. So,
All right. You got me there. Mine's a little bit of a de facto kind of – it's not really a multiple choice, but it's, you know, it's not too bad. According to Forbes 2019, there are five NHL teams worth more than $1 billion. Name three of them.
More than okay. How many guesses do I get here? Just three?
I'll tell you what. You can guess five and you get three of them right. I will give it to you.
Perfect. The New York Islanders.
Do you want me to tell you after each
one? Sorry. Okay. Yeah. You know, let me handle this way. I'm going to pick three. Tell me if I get any right. And then I'll use my last two guesses.
All right.
I'm going to pick I'm going to scratch the Islanders. I'm going to say the Rangers, the Bruins, and the Kings.
Okay. You got the Rangers and the Bruins right. The Kings are incorrect. So you have two more guesses to get one more.
Okay. Is it the Dallas Stars?
That is also incorrect. You are down to one final guess.
Okay. I'm really trying to think if it's a Canadian team or not. I don't – just because, like, you know, hockey is obviously huge in Canada, but, like, there's just more people watching in America.
We forget about the Canadian dollar over there. Fun economic fact.
This also is bothersome because I don't know if I know every single NHL team, but I assume the ones I don't know, I shouldn't know at this point. You know what? Let's say the Pittsburgh Penguins.
That is also incorrect. You have lost despite your best efforts. The three you were missing were the Blackhawks, the Toronto Maple Leafs, and the Montreal Canadiens.
Neither of those would have been the Canadian teams, I guess. I should have got the Blackhawks, though. That's on me.
Yeah. So, good try. We're still both 0-1.
Yep. All right. Moving on. We got MLB next, right?
Yep.
God, you're going to be so mad at me for this.
I know.
Who is the Miami Marlins all-time leading hitter? Is it A, Miguel Cabrera, B, Giancarlo Stanton, or C, Luis Castillo?
Luis Castillo, final answer.
You are correct, sir. Yes. It was Luis Castillo. I was hoping mentioning Miguel Cabrera earlier in the show would have thrown you off.
No, my gut's telling me to say Luis Castillo, but I played – or sorry, was telling me to say Miguel Cabrera, but I played too much MLB 2K5 because I knew Luis Castillo was there forever.
I had this bad feeling that the name Luis Castillo was just going to, like, hit it for you. Like, you were just going to know when you heard the name. So, good job.
All right. So, Robbie, besides the NHL question, my questions are, like, very Saw-esque, like, you know, Jigsaw – where I have devised trivia questions about all of your favorite teams to just toy with you. So this is going to make you look stupid if you don't get them right. So good luck.
Cool.
All right. So you are a Phillies fan. So my MLB question is about the Phillies.
Cool.
So what nickname did the Phillies adopt before the 1944 season? And your hint is this ultimately became a team later on in the future. Is it A, the Brewers, B, the Nationals, or C, the Blue Jays?
You said Brewers, Nationals, Blue Jays.
Yes.
I don't think it's the Nationals. I'm going to say the Brewers, final answer.
That is incorrect. I was shocked to learn it was the Blue Jays.
Okay, yeah.
Everyone hated it, though.
That's interesting. Because my immediate thought when you asked the question was like, is it the Athletics?
That was actually the Oakland Athletics used to be called the Philadelphia Athletics.
Yeah, that's right.
But yeah, it went from Philadelphia Quakers to Philadelphia Phillies, as I learned. And for a year, they were nicknamed the Blue Jays. So,
all right. So you're up 1-0 here. Whew, moving on. We got the NBA now. All right. I'm just toying with you.
Okay.
Who is the only guard, that's point guard or shooting guard,
okay,
in NBA history to average a block per game for their entire career? Is it A, Michael Jordan, B, Dwayne Wade, or C, Tony Allen?
Oh, you're toying with me. I don't like it. A block per game. My gut wants to say Tony Allen just because of how much of a defensive presence he was, but he is elite. Could you have also put a pandering question about Dwayne Wade in there? That would make sense. Do you want me to say Michael Jordan, but it's not actually Michael Jordan because you want to get to me? There's a lot of psychological aspects to this.
Really more what this is.
You know, a block per game. I got to say Tony Allen.
Final answer?
Final answer.
Well, you were almost right. It was Dwayne Wade.
I figured.
Yeah, Dwayne Wade, that is probably my favorite stat about him. As he said, you know, late in his career that the only stat he ever looked for in the box score was if he got his block per game. He is the only, again, like I said, the only guard to ever do it. So had to give him a little shout out. Hadn't give Dwayne Wade the answer to a question. So, all right, this has to be my best chance to get a question right. Basketball, give it to me.
All right. So I would like to give you this caveat before I read the question. There is not a requirement, like a number of games played requirement or time spent on the court requirement, at least to my knowledge.
Okay.
So you're a Heat fan, correct?
I am.
Who is the Heat's all-time career leader in two-point field goal percentage?
Percentage?
Yes.
Do I and have I don't believe. Or am I just guessing?
I'll give it to you. I don't believe there's a requirement on number of games played or time spent on the floor. Is it Shaq, Kelly Olynyk, or Bam Adebayo?
My only hesitation here is I swear to God, if it's Kelly Olynyk, I'm going to be so mad. But I'm going to say Bam Adebayo with my final answer.
That is incorrect. It is actually Shaq.
Is it Shaq? How? Okay. First of all, I need to take a deep breath because thank God it's not Kelly Olynyk.
I will be honest with you. Kelly Olynyk is behind by like 0.007. He is not by much.
That is devastating.
But Shaq is the all-time Heat career leader in two-point field goal percentage.
How far back was Bam?
Bam, I think, is like six, but not by much. It's like, I think Shaq was like 0.59. Bam was like 0.55 or 0.54.
Okay. That's fine.
So, not too bad.
All right. I'm mad I got that wrong, but I'm not mad about who I guessed. If I had guessed Kelly Olynyk, I don't think I would have been able to live with myself.
Probably not.
Okay. I got to stump you here, and this might be the easiest question I have.
Oh, boy.
Because this is one of those things you might just randomly know. In 1990, Derek Thomas of the Kansas City Chiefs set the NFL's single game record with sacks in a single game.
Is it
how
seven?
Many sacks? Seven? Was it
seven?
I'm gonna need answers. That's what I figured, but I was getting very uncreative. So yeah, seven sacks. The record has not been sniffed since. The closest has been 5.5.
Yeah.
Okay, I really gotta step up here. I gotta get these next two.
All right. So you're a Steelers fan, correct?
I don't know anymore.
All right. Well, Mel Blunt is the Steelers' single season leader for interceptions. He has the record for the Steelers. How many interceptions behind the overall single season record is he for his highest season total? So basically, this is a glorified math problem between Mel Blunt's top amount of interceptions per year and the NFL record for interceptions in a year. I'll give you numbers.
How many is he behind?
Yes.
This is an average, or this is a single season?
A single season. So like if Mel...
So like his single season record versus the NFL single season record.
Exactly. If Mel Blunt had five interceptions in a season and the record was 20, he'd be 15 behind.
Yeah, cool. Okay.
Is it four interceptions, three interceptions, or only a singular interception?
One singular interception.
That is incorrect. I'm sorry, but it is three interceptions. He had 11 in a season, and Night Train Lane has the record with 14 interceptions in a season.
I'm not mad about that. I'm mad that I've lost, and there's no hope for me at this point. But I'm still going to ask you my last question, because you better get it right. All right. You were there. You did hit your head, but you were there. So my record is during our one illustrious season of high school recreational basketball, you and I set many, many personal records, one of which for me was my individual points scored in a game. How many points did I score? Was it A, 18, B, 22, or C, 31?
My gut instinct was to say something in the 20s. My personal career points record is 22. And I think you also have 20. I believe it's 22.
You are correct.
Yeah.
You're absolutely correct. I had three threes. You hit your head. I scored four more points.
Yep.
22 in my own gym, the JCC. You know, got to remember the roots. But yeah, all right. Give me your questions for sanity's sake if I can get one right. But it's about NASCAR, isn't it?
No. That would have been good, though. That would have been very good. No. Going off this idea that I'm just going to toy with your past experiences, Who is the athlete that you have gone heads up against before? None other than Saquon Barkley, running back of the New York Giants.
Yep.
So Saquon is an unbelievable tank, and there's a reason he crushed Robbie in the 400.
Just a few.
Saquon is also incredibly gifted muscularly. Mm-hmm. Saquon, also known as Saquads, what was his squat, his max squat that he did before the combine?
Okay.
So, like, yeah, is it 455 pounds? Is it 495 pounds? Or is it 505 pounds? And if it helps, he did this 7 times.
Man, I've seen this dude. I've seen him before he went to the NFL, and he was still huge. His quads were still huge. So, like, to think the 500 mark, it feels in the realm. So I don't think it's the low end of this, just because, you know, there has to be a low end of this. I'm going to say 505. If I lose, I lose.
That is incorrect. He did not surpass the 500 mark. As far as I know, he hit 495 7 times.
Was giving him the benefit of the doubt. And yet again, I am let down when thinking about Saquon Barkley.
That is still a freakish amount of weight, but oh boy, what a sweep today.
Yeah, that's a clean sweep. So I will be doing something unpleasant next week. I do lots of unpleasant things, so this isn't really out of the realm for me. But yeah, no, congratulations. You don't have to chew a lot of gum or brush your teeth and then chug some orange juice. For anybody who was wondering, we did have a tiebreaker question prepared, and it would have been how many passing yards career-wise does Dante Culpepper have? Neither of us really even knew what a good guess would have been, so we were pretty proud of that question. But
should we do it just for shits and giggles?
But you know what? Yeah, let's do it. I'm going to guess 11,065.
I think that's actually a really good guess. That's my problem. I'm going to guess 15,420 because, you know, I'm a meme lord. Give it to me, Robert. Watch, it's like under 10.
Dante Culpepper, career pass. Oh, my Lord. Is this enough? Wait, what was your guess?
15,420.
I mean, I guess in theory you win because you're closer, but he has over 24,000 career passing yards.
Excuse me. Interesting.
He has 24,153 career passing yards.
Huh.
He was a Pro Bowler 3 times and, in fact, the starting quarterback on the worst team. Well, he was some of the starting quarterback for the worst team of all time, the Detroit Lions.
Huh. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is a great reminder that Dante Culpepper was an elite quarterback at one time, so we should all respect him as such.
I feel differently about that.
I also feel different about it, but he did it Randy Moss, so.
Either way, that is what we have prepared for you guys today. Real quick, do you want to do superlatives?
You know, Robbie, I will pass this week. I think we're going to come back next week with a ton of superlatives. But this lady who I don't know keeps Venmo requesting me $70 and just putting random emojis. And I want to yell at her.
What?
Exactly. It's $70 and it says turtle.
All right. Well, if we leave this in the episode, please don't send these people sending you emojis $70. And to anybody else who gets Venmo requests for $70 with just random emojis and you don't know who they're from. Again, if you're listening to this and we don't cut it, please, by all means, don't send them the money.
Oh, we're keeping this in. Holly McKenna, if that's your real name, stop requesting money. I'm not giving it to you. She's got 1,200 friends on
all
Venmo.
Right, okay, well, that is all we...
This is sus.
I don't know. Is she popular? All right. That is all we have for you guys this week. Fun trivia. Some news going around sports. Nothing insanely major, but the All-Star reserves. Again, I clearly don't know that much about sports, unfortunately, and Baker paid a little more attention to our rec days than I guess I thought he did. Either way, hope you guys enjoyed the episode and have a fantastic rest of your week. We'll be back next week.
Take care, everyone. Hope you have a great week. And as always, we'll be back giving you content that we hope you find funny and laugh at and find informative. But take care and yeah. COVID's coming to an end, folks.
I beat COVID. For anybody who is rooting for me, beat COVID. I feel great. I got to go to work today. It was so much fun, even though it was so busy. So be safe. Wear your mask. Godspeed.